I'm only a little person, but it's not the size of the dog in the fight, it's the size of the fight in the dog. So, yes, I kept fighting.
And keep fighting she did. That's 69-year-old Queensland grandma Yvonne Darcy, celebrating the news that the High Court has ruled that a US-based biotech firm can't patent the BRCA1 gene. The two-time cancer survivor fought a drawn-out legal battle before her ultimate victory in the country's highest court. It's been hailed as a landmark decision. But what are the actual implications of the ruling? Well, that depends on who you talk to. Grant Shoebridge is a patent attorney with law firm Shelston IP. He's also a former medical researcher who's worked in breast cancer research. Luigi Palombi is a patent attorney and adjunct professor with Murdoch University. He's also author of the book Gene Cartels. Here's Luigi.
Yvonne Darcy is a very brave woman who had breast cancer and has survived that experience. She went to court to test the limits of patent law, but I think primarily it was to clear the air about the patentability of these particular genetic mutations linked to breast cancer.
So what was the issue at the heart of this dispute?
The issue was essentially whether three claims in the patent, and the patent is a complex document, it actually consists of 30 claims, but whether three claims to isolated nucleic acids or genetic material that are referenced to particular genetic mutations, which will have a genetic code, were patentable subject matter under Australian law. In other words, were they inventions under the Patents Act?
What did the High Court decide?
The High Court decided that it was not, and has revoked those particular claims. I should mention that that's slightly academic in the sense that the patent in question expired in August. But here we are. This is one of the problems with this particular situation where unless someone like Yvonne Darcy takes on the case, it would never have been resolved. And it's taken a long time to get to this point.
And how long was the patent in existence for?
Well, the patent has a life of 20 years, a standard patent. Myriad themselves did not enforce this particular patent, and the Australian licensee, Genetic Technologies, did threaten to enforce it on a couple of occasions, but in the end backed down due to a lot of political pressure, I think.
Grant Shoebridge, the decision's been welcomed by consumer groups, the medical research community, pathologists. What do you make of the High Court's logic?
Look, I've got to say that I don't agree with it. The way I see things is that if you isolate a gene or other molecule from nature and you characterise it, what you have there is technology. And I think that technology should be patentable subject matter. But they have come to this decision now. And as a patent attorney, I'm happy to work within the spirit of that decision.
This decision's been welcomed by Yvonne Darcy because she says that tests will now be cheaper. She said until now, effectively, few people could afford testing, and this decision will change that.
Well, testing will be a lot cheaper, and it will be more available to them by more geneticists rather than using only Myriad's agents at a price that nobody really can afford.
That's not true. That's not true because, firstly, the claims to doing the test were never challenged. Companies can still invent genetic diagnostic tests and have patents granted for them and set a price. So Ms. Darcy's understanding that the price of the test will come down is just not right. And as Luigi said before, Myriad were not enforcing this particular patent in Australia. So for a long time, any sort of clinical lab set up to do the test could do the test and charge a reasonable rate for it.
Luigi Palombi, would you acknowledge that this won't have any real impact or benefit for consumers of medical tests?
I don't agree with that at all. I think that we've got to see this case as a test case. Sure, it was the BRCA case that brought it to the public's attention because it's such an emotionally charged topic. But there are literally hundreds and hundreds of patents that apply to genetic tests. And I would say the value of those patents has dramatically drifted southward as a result. Look, in essence, what this decision does is it clears the ground, it clears the landscape of a whole lot of patents over genetic material that are used as a linchpin upon which to claim genetic tests as patentable subject matter. The very important point here is that in the Myriad case and in a lot of cases, the underlying technological platform of the genetic tests that use these genetic materials are standard routine tests. Now, if you take away the patentability of the genetic material, you're not left with anything to patent. So unless you actually go away and do the hard yards and develop a truly innovative and inventive diagnostic test, the ground is now open to competition. It means diagnosticians and clinicians will be able to produce their own tests, work with the materials into producing those tests. They don't need to pay thousands of dollars for genetic tests anymore.
And up until now, what do you say had been the impact on medical researchers who were trying to develop those kinds of tests as you describe them, or try and find out more about the usefulness of those genes?
It was essentially an obstacle. What was happening was that genetic researchers were having to search the patent register to see if whatever they were planning on researching was going to be subject to patents, such as these particular ones. I know, for instance, that at the Peter MacCallum Cancer Institute, research that they were conducting on BRCA testing was delayed by 2 years. The cost was increased dramatically as a result of the fact that these patents existed. So now they don't have to worry about that. It means a lot of research money that might have been spent on expensive patent attorneys and lawyers and courts, they don't have to worry about. They can actually get onto the job of using the genetic material information to develop whatever it is that they are looking to develop.
Grant Shoebridge, you're a patent attorney, but you're also a former medical researcher who actually worked in the area of breast cancer research. What's your response to what Luigi is saying?
I think that the evidence doesn't suggest that these particular types of patents were in any way stifling research. Luigi mentions the Peter MacCallum Centre. My understanding is that they were conducting the clinical test, and that's why that there was a problem. But in terms of just doing research on sequences, you know, the evidence shows that after the BRCA genes were patented, there was thousands and thousands of peer review publications published. The other thing I think that's important is that I think it was in 2013, the Centre for International Economics released an independent report into the economics of gene patents in Australia. A key finding of that report was that these particular types of patents were crucial in bringing life sciences innovation to the general public in the form of new diagnostics and or treatments.
This all boils down to which comes first, but you know, a lot of research conducted by universities, which ultimately leads to the development that are subject to these particular patents, was done by public money. It's not a question of the patent being the be-all and end-all and the critical trigger for innovation. It is public money, it is research money of that kind that really drives this kind of uncommercial, not necessarily commercially driven research.
Can I just sort of say something in relation to that? I mean, Luigi's right about public funding for innovation in lab research, but once you've made that initial discovery or, you know, initial finding, then bringing that out of the lab and to the marketplace, that's where you need private funding, because governments just aren't in a position to fund that sort of commercialization. Myriad, in the mid-90s or before that, were a pioneering company. No one was thinking about doing this sort of personalized medicine stuff. They took an enormous risk, invested an enormous amount of money, and developed a test that will save and has saved women's lives. So I think that the public perception that they're bad or they're all bad, I don't think that's the case.
Look, I think Grant's gilding the lily a little bit, if I can say. Look, you know, it was pretty obvious to all concerned what was going to happen once the genetic information relevant to the link to breast cancer was made. Using it in a diagnostic test is like rudimentary 101 science. There was no major risk involved. They all knew what was going to happen. And the reason why they got a patent on the gene was because if they didn't get a patent on the gene, they weren't going to get a patent on anything, because effectively the diagnostic technology was routine, basic. It was already out there. It had been used for a long, long time. So the only new piece of information that came out was the genetic information linked to those particular genetic mutations. And as the court has held, that's not going to be enough to get you cross the invention line. This case is important because it presses the reset button. For the last 20 years, Australian patent law has been just limping along in some really silly, direction, and the High Court took this case, I think, to really send a message to us all that we've got to get involved in issues of public policy. And what the court said in this instance was, when they looked at it really carefully, is you've got nothing here that's new other than the genetic mutations. That's really what your patent is about. That's not going to get you over the line.
Patent attorney Luigi Palombi, and before him, patent attorney Grant Shoebridge, both talking about Yvonne Darcy's victory in the High Court.
I'm just very happy for everybody concerned, even for future generations. I'm very, very happy about it, yes. I'm so delighted, yes. It's wonderful.